Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening. Happy Shabbat to one and all. It is party time beginning this evening for the next 8 days with the Yahweh, the happiest of all of the Mikra is Sukkah. It means to camp out. It's translated shelters or tents, sometimes booths. But it's all about camping out with the Yahweh. And this is the first of 8 days of Sukkah. There are 7 day celebration plus an eighth that we will Sukkah with Yahweh forever, those of us who are part of the covenant family. Oh, well, happy Shabbat to both Dee and to Kirk. I understand that things are doing well, except for the yard police and Carmelia, and that... He is headed east, or headed west, out of central Florida, and will soon be migrating to Kentucky, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. My old Kentucky home. Well, we do not finish tonight with regard to Sukkah. We will be able to finish next week. It's the one Moed Mikre, where we actually have 7 days. So while this evening is the first of the 7 days of Sukkah plus the eighth, and this time next week we will be celebrating the eighth day of just a bit of an introduction before we say about camping out with him. This is actually the seventh of seven steps to God. It's actually Asia. There are really six steps to Yahweh. With the first can be the threshold. The third, we actually enter Yahweh's home. The fourth, we grow. The fifth, it is our responsibility as members of God's family to be about our Father's business, call His people home. Reconciliations is the final step, if you will, in the sense that it's the last opportunity for Yehudim to get their act together and resolve their differences with Yahweh. It is the day that Yahweh returns with Dod in year 6000. Leads us to Sukkah, which is camping out. The thing that very few people recognize is that not only are these seven Moed Mikre all integrated and they're a unified path to God, the only means to salvation, the only means to reconciliation, the only means to life eternal, the only means to perfection. But this process actually takes us from where we are in a world torn apart by religion and politics and estranged from God directly to His home. And when you read the Torah, it is all about coming full circle. The story begins, at least the story of our relationship with Yahweh, begins in the Gan Eden, Garden of Great Joy. It was a place where Adam and later Adam and Chawa had perfect communication with Yahweh, where they had no worries, no concerns. Life was as good as it could possibly be. There was no religion. There was no politics. There were no conspiracies. There was no error. There was nothing but direct access to Yahweh and to a joyous life. And that is exactly what Sukkah represents. We are being brought back full circle to Gan Eden. The reason there's so much about that place and what occurred there and Yahweh's interactions with Adam in the Gan Eden is because God wants us to know what he's offering. If you don't like the conditions depicted in Eden, if you don't think that that being without religion and being without politics, being without conspiracies, being without governments and police and militaries and patriotism, if those things are important to you, then you're going to hate heaven.
For real.
Understand, that's what Sukkah represents. That's where we're going back to. And it's just, while Eden was, I'm sure, a reasonably large place, currently under the crystal blue waters of Lake Van in eastern Turkey, and while I'm sure it was beautiful and ample room to roam around, the fact that the renewal of the earth back to those conditions, it will begin with the land of Israel, which is much, much larger than Eden was. And then from there, it's going to expand to the entire earth and ultimately to the entire universe. You know, we live in one around one of 400 billion stars and one of several hundred billion galaxies. So you get some scope of how big the universe is, and ultimately that's going to be our garden. And we will be expanded to seven dimensions so that we can enjoy it all. You know, as we move from three dimensions to four, we're automatically liberated in time. And once we're liberated in time and get rid of our limitations of our physical bodies, then the entire universe is ours to explore. We can be 94 or 96, whatever the current dimensions are. It's constantly expanding. But we can be all the way across it in no time. And even once we get to where we want to go as energy, you might say, well, you can't move any faster than the speed of light. But on a photon of light, time simply exists. So while that might be the limitation in speed, since time doesn't move, the duration that it takes to get from here to there is nothing. And so what do you care that you're limited to 186,000 miles per second if it takes no time to travel across the entire universe? So it's going to be a very, very big tent that we're going to be given the opportunity to explore. So this is the big picture. The other thing that is exceedingly important is to understand how these Moed Mikre integrate with the benefits of the Bereth Covenant. Without the first four Mikre, the Bereth Covenant benefits cannot be delivered.
Clean.
But, you know, they are, first of all, eternal life, which is provided through Pesach Passover. It's the doorway to life. And then our perfection. Dode fulfilled both Pesach and Matzah, physical body sacrificed as the lamb, as the Zeruah, to fulfill Pesach, and then on Matzah, his soul carried our guilt, the guilt of every covenant member, into Sheol and deposited there. Without our guilt, with it being taken to a place that where it can never be seen, we appear perfect in God's eyes. This resulted in Dod becoming Yahweh's firstborn, his Bakur, on Bakurim. And it's plural because there will be many children of the covenant who follow on the same path. This enables Yahweh to enrich us and empower us, to emancipate us and enlighten us. Children, raising his children on Shavuah. And as the beneficiary of those first four Mikra that were fulfilled by and for Dod, God, we live Teruah. As I've said so many times, for the past 23 years, I have been in a constant Teruah mode, as have many others in the Covenant family who are devoted to sharing what we learn with Yisrael and with Goyim. The primary message that we are delivering during Teruah is that Yahweh and his son, Dod, the Messiah, are returning on Kippurim. It is the day of reconciliations. It is a day to celebrate a reunion with Yahweh. The rabbis have it completely wrong. And it is the time that Dod will go to the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant, which will be raised and placed inside of a newly constructed house of God, a bereth of, and he will anoint it so that in compliance with the Torah, can bring this remnant of Yisrael into his family. And 5 days later, after Yahweh has restored the earth back to the conditions of Eden, then we celebrate Sukkah. So the invitation to the final party begins with, this is from Kara 23, statement 33, and Yahweh spoke to Moshe for the purpose of saying. Sometimes we just read past Moshe's name, but I don't want to read past either one of these two names. First, if you look at Judaism, there is no mention of Yahweh ever. And the difference is that in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, Yahweh's name is mentioned 7,000 times. If you don't know Yahweh's name, if you don't use Yahweh's name, if you don't proclaim Yahweh's name, if you don't love Yahweh's name, if you don't understand Yahweh's name, you don't know him. And so the very minimal requirement to participate and benefit from any of these Moed Mikre is to know and love Yahweh's name. It's the first word in this statement. Moshe was probably the greatest man who ever lived. His character was exemplary. He had a superlative intellect. He was amazingly devoted to the task of liberating and enlightening and leading his people. He's one of the few people that you look at his life and what he did, Yahweh, and thereafter, there isn't a flaw on the man's resume. You know, it's pretty tough to have been abused by the children of Yisrael while you're trying to save them, after you've already been badgered by them for 40 years, and still be dedicated to the task. In my mind, I don't think there was ever a man that walked in his shoes. And you know, he is not the most important man in God's story. That clearly is Dod, who will fulfill the last two Moed Mikre, including Sukkah. He is the king of Sukkah. But nonetheless, this is an extraordinary man. His name means to draw out. So Yahweh spoke to Moshe for the purpose of saying. Now, it is important at this point also to recognize that very early on during the Exodus, Yahweh decided that it would be a good thing for him to validate Moshe's credentials, to prove to the children of Yisrael that it was indeed the creator God of the universe who was sharing the teaching and guidance with him that would comprise the Torah. Now, we have looking back at the history of the creation of the universe and everything that Yahweh conveyed through Moshe prophetically to it was indeed God that was speaking to him. But there in the moment, without the time to validate all of these things or a scientific understanding of our creation, Yahweh needed to bolster Moshe's credibility, particularly among Israelites who were fond of devouring credibility. So he spoke directly to the children of Israel, but they were irascible. They were much more comfortable building false gods and idols and complaining than they actually were listening to God. So it may have just been the fact that they were so corrupt, and they knew it, that they didn't want to be seen by God. And if God stopped speaking directly to them, maybe their all of their faults would be somehow less visible. They would perhaps it was nothing more than they preferred company of false gods. They preferred the company of gods that they made. It's like rabbinic Jews prefer their own testimony. They prefer their own Talmud. They prefer their Hashem. You know, constantly they will say, Hashem will come to get you. Oh, yeah. Hashem's mad about that. They've made a god in their own image. And Jews have been more proficient at that than anyone else, making gods in their own image. And so they didn't like Yahweh speaking directly to them. So Yahweh at that moment affirmed that he wouldn't do that again, that he would speak through individuals like Moshe, which is why we're getting that, this revelation from him. The next first line that Yahweh says is, converse, go talk with the Bene, the children of Yisrael, of those who either engage and endure with God or those who struggle and strive against the Almighty, and say, on the 15th day of the 7th month is the festival feast, the Chag, of shelters, of Sukkah, of homes and dwelling places, of tabernacles and tents, representing a protective clothing, covering, a sheltered abode where families live, for 7 Sheba days. God's instructions, pretty simple.
Yes.
Day of the 7th month. The first day of the 7th month, and the way that months are calibrated in the Hebrew calendar, is that the renewal of the of light on the moon's surface closest to the vernal equinox is the first of Abib. 14 days later is Pesach. 15th day is Matzah. 16th day is Bukurim. From Bukurim, it's 7 sevens of days, 49 days, and you arrive at Shavuah. Counting months, which are 25 days, a lunar cycle, from Abib 1, which is the first of the year, the 7th month would be the renewal of the moon's light 7 times after Abib 1. That would be the 7th month. We are now in the 7th month of the Hebrew calendar. The first day of this month is Teruah. The 10th day of the 7th month is Yom Kippurim. And the 15th day of the month is this festival feast of Sukkah. 7th, Yahweh knows that between 12 and 13 lunar months in the year, there's only 3 months where events take place in terms of to meet with God. And in those, only 2 of the months are numbered and specifically named. So this is the 7th month. He speaks of the first month, and there are 3 invitations to meet in the first month, and there were three in the seventh month. A chag is a time to celebrate, and what we're celebrating is homes and dwelling places and tabernacles and tents, sukkah, camping out. And God says it's for 7 days. So now this is the seventh month, and we're going to do it for 7 days. Seven becomes essential. This is the seventh of seven Moed Mikre. And it is to be celebrated for 7 days in the seventh month. Its purpose is
7 days.
Yeah.
Like those camping trips with your family, that you want them to last.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
It's a fun time. You know, there's in today's world, we have different ways of some celebrating it. I've had friends that put boxes in their living rooms and camped out like in their living room. Some people actually put a tent inside of their house. You know, you and I both live in a place where there's lots of mosquitoes, and it really isn't to be outside. You know, right now we were sharing we have 86 degrees and 81% humidity at 7:21 in the evening. You know, there's a reason God invented air conditioning and doors to keep the mosquitoes outside and the humidity inside at a more comfortable. We do sukkah inside, but we call a room in the house is our tent. And tonight, as a celebration of sukkah, we do have an external canopy. It is as close to a tent as anything that we have here, and we dined outside in our external canopy. We call it the Leolair. So, you know, there are ways to symbolically celebrate it. But, you know, God is not interested in us doing some ritual where we go and we pitch a tent around Jerusalem. What he wants us to understand is he's coming home to Jerusalem. This is about our homecoming. This is about living together as a family and celebrating being part of God's family. And it is this journey of how the previous six Moed Mikre bring us to this place and how we celebrate God's plan of seven, of six plus one equals God's idea of a good time, a chag. Six is the number of man who was created on the sixth day. And as a carbon-based life form with an atomic number of six, plus God who is one, Ichad, equating to seven. That is God's formula, and everything is based around it. So sukkah is God's promise to us. He's telling us that the seventh day that we have been invited to camp out with him. That's pretty. Creator of the universe has invited us to camp out with him. I tell you, when one of the things that I loved more than almost anything when I was a considerably younger man and my sons were very young, is that we would put on backpacks and we would head up to the Sahara's. We lived in California and the High Sierras were you know, a reasonable drive from us, and we could hike from 8,000 feet to 12,000 feet in that range, and camp out beside beautiful crystal streams and the smell of the pine and the sound the wind makes when it goes through it, and even get above the tree level and the granite tops of these mountains as they were polished by glaciers long ago, and then these glacial lakes that dot the Sierras. It is such a wonderful experience to camp out with your children, and that's what God is inviting us to do. He is our Father. He's inviting us to camp out with him. So it is a chag. It is a festival feast. It is a party. A derivation of sukkah, sukkoth, is first used in Bereshith 33:17, and it is there that we can probe the meaning of the word itself, and we find our to the mikra of sukkah much earlier for Bereshit, Genesis 33:7. So Yaakov, which means reward or consequence, it also means my stance, I grab the heel, it's Yaakov from a cob, to receive a benefit or suffer a penalty and overreaching, digging in by being stubborn or embedding one's heels to be steadfast. That's a lot to learn from a name, but that's what Yaakov means. Was led, Nasa, was he set out on a journey and was guided to Sukkoth, the tabernacle of perfection from Sukkot to cover and protect. And he built Bana, constructed and established to facilitate procreation, restoration, and prosperity, a house, a family home. And then he made shelters for his possessions. A very clear indication of what Sukkah is all about. It's about settling down with loved ones. Therefore, the name of his home and dwelling place where his ascension began, Makum, it is from Ma, means to ponder the implications of, and kum, to stand up and rise, is invited and summoned. It is read and recited as, this is from Kara, which is the verb that defines the mikre. Mikre is a compound of ma, to ponder the implications of, Kara, being invited, summoned, to be met with and welcomed, to read and recite. And the plural, it's mikre as opposed to mikra, of Sukkoth. So you're invited and summoned to recite about Sukkoth. When Yaakov arrived and was included within this close personal fellowship, Shalem, he awakened and rose early in the day to show the way to get the most out of Asher, the life in the realm of the subdued, the Canaan, and he came from having been delivered and elevated. In other words, Yahweh showed him the way to go from Canaan, the subdued, into this elevated state while celebrating Sukkah. So he camped out, having been treated mercifully, Wa Kana, along with the presence of the awakened and arisen. What a lovely presentation of Sukkah, even before the Mikre is introduced. There's nothing to wonder about. It's all laid out there for us. It's a time to, having been drawn out of a place where people are subdued, which would be by religion and politics, and being elevated and rising up to God, camping out with him, being treated mercifully, building a home, living there with family, engaging in personal, close personal relationships. And it was the beginning of his ascension, and it's directly associated with the verb kara. First use of the word. God has defined what he's offering. It's a feast for the eyes when we look beyond the names and superficial meanings of these words to their roots, which portray their original connotations. Yahweh provided us with a map home. No matter where we are, even surrounded by politically and religiously subjugated individuals, we can answer Yahweh's invitation to camp out with him on Sukkah, awakened and risen. And is the case with most terms found in Yahweh's word, God defines them in their first use. The festival of shelters is about camping out with God and living mercifully under his protection. Now, one of the interesting things here, too, is that the Yatzah, the Exodus, it began with a trip to, guess where? Sukkoth.
Same place.
This is what led them there. The religious and political oppressors, Mitzrayim, were intensely resolute. Chazaz, they were strong-willed and harsh with the people, with the family, and hurriedly sent them out of the region, out of their land, for they said, "We will all die." That was the time the 10th plague, and the 10th plague was the ultimate blessing for God's people. It was Passover. But that's the doorway to the light, to life. And the rank-and-file Egyptians were much smarter than their pharaoh and said, you know, this idea that you can spar with the creator God of the universe is way above the pay grade of even the pharaoh. And so they said, get these people out of here. Stop it already. This was Thutmose that had the big ego. But just stop it already. And at the moment, Thutmose, I'm sure, was grieving, and he was mad because his firstborn son had been killed the night before. And it's interesting, of course, if you look up Egyptian history, Thutmose's son not only dies at this time, but guess who didn't bother to write about how his life was taken? You know, with the Egyptians writing about all of their great triumphs, the death of his eldest son goes unmentioned other than he died.
Yep.
So
very
people,
out of character.
Yes, yeah. So the people brought along their dough before it was yeasted, and there was a return to the grievous sorrow of cruel oppression. Terem Chemesh, in advance of the embittered fungus conceiving the culture of ruthless persecution. It is, of course, telling. The word for yeast, and yeast is a very pervasive fungus. And the word for it means to grieve, to suffer cruel oppression, to be embittered, to endure ruthless persecution. That is what Yahweh is asking us to remove from our lives and from our diet on yeasted bread, on matzah, is that which grieves, that which oppresses, that which causes persecution. And really, and there's only two things that do that. Primarily is religion. Roman Catholic Church and the people they have persecuted. Look at Islam and those they have persecuted. Yeah. Look at Judaism persecuting their own. Their own of worth of living. And politics will do that. So those are the only two things that embitter
and they both puff you
therefore,
up with pride.
Yeah. So God is asking us to remove religion and politics from our lives as part of matzah, and what we don't remove, what we haven't had there as a legacy of former guilt, a dote has taken away on our behalf. They had their kneading bowls in their garments, bound up in their garments, and upon their shoulders to get an early start. When the children of Yisrael had engaged in a manner consistent with Moshe's message, they asked the religious despots and political tyrants in Mitzrayim for implements and cooking vessels, things considered valuable, along with objects of gold in addition to clothing. You know, they had earned these things. They had worked as slaves for 80 years. During that time, they hadn't been paid. And so call it back wages. But Yahweh was not only liberating them against the will of Pharaoh Thutmose, the people said, we have pissed off God. That was a really bad thing to do. The least we can do for 80 years that we enslaved these people is give them some parting gifts, and maybe God won't continue to plague us. Yahweh bestowed and granted for the family a sense of empathy, resulting in favorable and compassionate treatment in the sight of the oppressors, such that they let them have what they requested. Thereby, they spared Mitzrayim. So God is saying exactly what I'm saying here, is that the Egyptians were smart enough to recognize that these plagues had happened because God had asked Pharaoh, Thutmose, to let his children go, to stop abusing them, to stop enslaving them, let them go. He says, you know, we've got things to attend to here, and these are my people, and we're going to work together. Let them go. And he said, no, I want to keep them as my slaves. He thought he possessed them, that he owned them. And so the rank and file Egyptians said, no. We need not only to let these people go, we need to show God that we wish them no harm, and that we are in some ways making amends, that we're saying we're sorry and trying to to just resolve all the grievances that we have bestowed upon these people. And so they complied with the Yisraelite wishes. The children of Yisrael set out from Ramses to Sukkoth. Clearly it does not say they left Pharaoh Ramses, because he would come much later. It says they left Ramses. And that's important for a number of reasons. One is this was written around 1447 BCE. That was basically 3,500 years before anyone stumbled upon the Rosetta Stone and knew how to read the ancient Egyptian script. And yet in this vocalized language is Hebrew, it's written out right here in the Torah, the name of the Ra. And Ramses is a name derived from the name of the Egyptian god, Ra. He was the sun god. So it's fascinating in that regard. In terms of the Pharaoh of the Exodus, if you look at the timing and the timeline deed that you've created for the site, it's pretty obvious that it was 1447 BCE. And they've done a lot of work on the Egyptian chronology in the last 5 to 10 years. There were three or four different chronologies, and now I think there's one that is overwhelmingly preferred. And it has, during that time, Thutmose III, with his stepmother, Hatshepsut, for a number of years, and was just out there being a general and a warrior for his early days. And then when his stepmother died, he became full pharaoh of Egypt. And he was pharaoh at the time that this was all taking place.
Right.
Israel set out from Ramses to Sukkoth. So from the son of the sun, which is what Ramses means in the Egyptian dialect, to Sukkoth, temporary dwelling. So it was their first stop along the way. And they were with approximately 600,000 able individuals on foot besides children. That's a lot of people.
Wow.
But you know, they had been there for better part of 400 years that they were estranged from the land. And so over those centuries and life was good for the Hebrews in Mitzrayim. They were productive and economically, and obviously in terms of procreation, they were prolific. It was just the last 80 years. And I think a lot of that is due to the Egyptian fortunes. They were controlled by other ethnicities, pretty well subjugated themselves. That yoke, they felt very full of themselves and responded rather than saying, boy, we really hated being oppressed. We will not oppress anybody. They said, you know, we hated being oppressed, so we're going to be oppressors. And so at that point, the Hebrews were at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
So they baked the dough, which they had brought out of the crucibles of oppression as flat loaves, as matzah, as unyeasted bread, because there was no embitterment, chamatz, added. As they had been expelled from Mitzrayim, the crucibles of political and religious oppression, and they would not have prevailed had they delayed. This is a marvelous statement. And while we're here tonight to celebrate Sukkah, there is no especially important that we garner what we just learned about matzah. For the past 22 years, I've been singing the same tune, which is the chametz yeast, that is the fungus that is being removed during matzah, represents religion and politics.
Yes.
Period. What does this say?
Anything.
They set out from Ramses. They were leaving behind religion and politics. And so their matzah was unyeasted because there was no continuing embitterment, because they were expelled, they were driven, they were cast out. They had separated from crucibles of political and religious oppression. And had they remained, there would be no freedom. Had they delayed, they would still be swallowed up by the fungus of this embittering yeast of religion and politics. It is the same message to God's children today. If you delay leaving Judaism or liberal or conservative politics in Israel or in America, you're going to miss the opportunity. There will be no Sukkah for you. Delay.
No.
You have to leave the embittering and subjugating influence of religion and politics to be able to camp out with God. So this is an exceedingly clear presentation of what matzah is all about. And of course, in rabbinic Judaism, there is no celebration of matzah. According to the Torah, it's the single most important of all seven of the Moed Mikra. This is the day that Dod Sol, our chametz, our religious and political guilt, into Sheol and deposited there never to be seen again. And yet, what the rabbis have done is turn Passover into a seven-day holiday, when Passover is a single night. It's matzah that is a seven-day celebration, just as is Sukkah. Moreover, they had not done anything to prepare food or provisions for themselves. Oh, so they were going off on a journey through the wilderness back to the promised land, and they hadn't done anything to prepare. What does that mean?
Has to rely on, yeah.
That is what it means. That is exactly what it means. That they didn't have anything prepared, and it was Yahweh who had made the preparations for them. They were living Yahweh's plan. They were benefiting from Yahweh's provisions. the time interval of the children of Israel in which they remained in the realm of Mitzrayim, the crucibles of religious and political oppression, 30 years and 400 years. And then it came to pass at the completion of 30 years and 400 years in this one substantial, essential, and foundational day, it came that everyone who was part of the vast assemblage of individuals following their leader, Yahweh, came out from the realm of religious and political persecution and tyranny. When did they come out? The day before had been what? Pesach, Passover.
Yep.
They celebrated the doorway to life on Pesach. What was the day that they left religion and politics behind?
Matzah.
Yeah, matzah. Why in the world did religious Jews write matzah out of their calendar? This is the essential day. This is the very substantial, essential, and foundational day. And we're reading about this because, of course, we're studying Sukkah, and this is the next mention of Sukkah. They left Ramses and went to Sukkah. But what are we learning? We're learning that Chametz represents religious and political guilt, and this is what they left behind to be with Yahweh.
Right.
When it comes to Sukkah, camping out with God, there is more to the experience than the destination itself. Yahweh is told us about this story so that we might also appreciate from where we have come. This contrast equips us with a better understanding of the difference between what man and God are offering. Their journey led them from Mitzrayim, Egypt, politics, religion, the caste system, to Sukkoth, from religious and political oppression to camping out with God. The rabbinic insistence on excluding goyim who do not convert to Judaism from the benefits of inclusion and citizenship within Israel is certainly at contrast to Yahweh's instruction. It also affirms that Israel was called to do what they have long foregone. This is now Shemot, Exodus 12:47, same chapter. The entire community of witnesses of Israel, individuals who engage and endure with God, should, on their own volition, observe everything. And if a foreigner living as a guest, congregating together with you, acts upon and engages in Pesach, Passover, to approach Yahweh, every male must be circumcised. And then at that time, of course, circumcised because it's the sign of the covenant. And if you're not part of the covenant, the last thing you want to do is open the door to eternal life, because it would be spent separated from Yahweh. And that means you'd have an enduring trip to hell. Oh.
Mm.
And then at that time, they or he may approach and engage in it. It will be the same for the native-born individual of the land. Therefore, any uncircumcised person shall not consume or eat it. There was and will always be only one Torah.
Hey.
For the foreigner living as a guest, congregating among you. And that worked for us. That means there is no oral Torah, because there's only one of them.
Right.
And it also means that there is the Torah is not a Jewish book, but instead Yahweh's book that teaches all mankind. Tell your children about this day, saying, for the sake of the participants who benefit from this occasion, Yahweh engaged to do this for me when I came out of and was removed of oppression. And it shall exist on your behalf as an awe-inspiring sign for your hand and influence and action. And that's really what every Mikra ought to be. It ought to be an awe-inspiring sign, something that we understand the symbolism of and what it means pursuant to our relationship with God. And it represents a memorial reminder and a commemoration for retrospection, depicting a record, a zekeron, for comprehension between your eyes. Now, the religious have decided, well, what it means, they want us to put a box between our eyes and impair our vision. And we're already blind, really ruined it. And we're already lame, but we're going to put another box on the back of our hand. And the way that we tie the ribbon to hold that box will be a religious rite that the rabbis will explain to us. But God is using symbolic language, and it represents a memorial reminder and a commemoration for retrospection, depicting a record worth recalling. La Zacharon is the, to a maximum, a proverb, a symbol, and an inheritance rite. Comprehension between your eyes. If you want to comprehend something, you probably don't want to put it in a box. For the purpose is so that the Torah, teaching and guidance of Yahweh, exists and thus in your speech. Now, they were smart enough to recognize that you're not supposed to eat the Torah. So you don't see them munching. But how could you be smart enough to know, okay, we're really not supposed to eat the Torah, we're supposed to speak the Torah, but yet you're not smart enough to recognize that the sign between the eyes and on the back of the hand was also a metaphor. Indeed, the powerful, strong, and resolute hand, which would be the influence of Yahweh, another metaphor, by the way, brought you out. There was no eye. There was the pillar cloud and the flame, and it's a metaphor of Yahweh brought you out, removing and delivering you from the oppressive nature of religion and politics, Mitzrayim. Therefore, closely examine, carefully consider, and observe this clearly communicated written prescription of what you should do to live. That is a tshuka, drawing near during this eternal witness to the appointed meeting time, la zot la moed, days for days upon. All of this instruction is for us to observe so that we might live. Right. It is God's eternal witness to us, and it just so happens to coincide with these seven meeting times each year. Go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was just saying, you know, you said Shemar. We've never translated it different than carefully examine, closely examine rather than carefully observe things. So why would you not do it that way? It just it ain't that hard. He's a very good communicator, Yahweh.
Yeah, he invented language, particularly the Hebrew language, and he was able to use a three-dimensional language, create it and use it to conceive life through DNA. Yeah. So I'd say he's probably a pretty decent communicator. I would rank that up with his many of his attributes. Yep. That's why he loved Dode, because Dode was such an effective communicator. That's why he used Moshe. Moshe is an exceedingly effective communicator.
You ain't bad yourself.
Yeah, not to the same extent, but to some degree, I'm certain that that's part of the equation, part of the appeal.
Yeah.
And it shall come to exist that when Yahweh brings you to the land of the Kenai, it will be according to his sworn oath and promise to you and to your fathers, giving her to you. So when the children of Israel became abysmal, ingrates, spoiled brats, during the 40 years of the time they were freed from slavery in Mitzrayim until the time that Yahusha ben Nun led them into the promised land. The only reason that Yahweh stuck with them was that he'd made a promise to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a caveat that said, I will do it so long as they're not irascible brats. So he said, I'm doing this. This is my promise to you. This land is a promise. This land, though, represents far more than a troubled and bloodied piece of dirt. The land represents God's home. It represents being part of the covenant family. It represents camping out with our Heavenly Father. And he made those promises to Abraham as part of the covenant, and he is honoring those promises. And that's the reason why he will be fulfilling Kippurim and Sukkah with his son Dod 10 years from now. So when it occurs that your child asks in the future, saying, what is this all about? Say to him or her, by the powerful and strong hand, the Chosek Yad of Yahweh, he brought us out, withdrew, and delivered us, Yatsa, that's the basis of Exodus, which is a Greek word, away from religious and political oppression and out of the house of slavery. So what are you supposed to tell our children?
I read this to my kids, and it made total sense to them. It was kind of incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh knows how to communicate, for sure.
Has reached down and out to us with a powerful, and strong, firm, reliable hand. And with that hand, he has brought us out and delivered us from the consequence of, and he has liberated and emancipated us from slavery. And even if you benefit from living in a time when there's only some 50 million slaves in the world, only, what a tragic number, I will tell you that every citizen of every country gives up many of their rights, particularly in Muslim countries or in communist countries. You give up an enormous amount of freedom to your country. And for most of human history, like the serfs of Roman Catholic Europe had no freedoms. And until about 200 years ago, the caste system was pervasive around the world. And so people were indeed slaves, and we've talked about this in ancient Rome and Greece, which, historians and others like to say, the grandeur of these places. No, 90% of the people who lived in those places, Athens and Rome, they were slaves.
Yeah.
And of the 10% that weren't slaves, most of them were well down on the caste system, such that life was only free for a very tiny percentage of people. And so this is what Yahweh is offering to liberate us from. He is a liberator, which means that the Torah doesn't have laws to obey. He is not imposing on us as a Lord. He is a liberator. He is the ultimate. Now, Mitzrayim was both the name of this horrible place and a word that described what transpired there. It is the crucibles of religious and political oppression. And this is based upon Mitzrayim, the tyrants and despots behind governmental and military economic subjugation. The plural of Matzor, it speaks of those besieged during a time of testing and tribulation. It is derived from Suwr, T-S-U-W-R, which is an oppressive place, a place where people are bound and confined by an adversary, assaulted and afflicted with the conditions akin to those enclosed in a concentration camp. And it is from Suwr that we see the connection between these conditions in this place and time and what is about to befall Jews during the time of Jacob's Suwr, Israel's troubles. When in Sukkah, they became part of the family. God's testimony continues. And then they set out and moved on from Sukkoth. They camped out in Etham on the edge of the wilderness. Yahweh walked in their presence during the day with a columnar cloud to lead and guide them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to shine light upon them so that they might walk day by day and night by night. All the while, Yahweh will be about his business, which will be transforming the earth back into Eden as the ultimate celebration of this day. We're now turning to one of the most wonderful prophecies about this day. It's found in Yeshayah, Isaiah 4. In this day, which is his day, living vegetation will sprout and thrive, branching out and growing. Shamak is also the title afforded to Doe David far more than even Masayach. For Yahweh, it will be beautiful and splendorous. In other words, God's going to reclaim the earth in such a way that it is restored back into the conditions of the Garden of Eden. Then he will approach as a glorious manifestation, along with the majestic and eminently wonderful, fruitful offering of the realm. The remnant of survivors of Yisrael and Yehudah will also have an attractive and shining appearance. So not only is the garden being reestablished, but the remnant of Yisrael who gather on Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, October 2nd in 2033 at sundown, not only will the earth be restored, but this remnant of survivors of Yisrael and Yehudah are also going to have an attractive and shining appearance. They're going to be transformed into light. So it's not just restoring the earth, it's restoring the very nature of the covenant family. Then it will come to pass that he who remains in Zion, which are the signs posted along the way, with the remnant spared in Jerusalem, will be called set apart. For all who approach him will be written and inscribed in the book of lives. In Jerusalem, which means the source from which guidance and teaching regarding reconciliation flow. Yeshayah, Isaiah 4:3. Then Yahweh will create, initiating something cutting edge, exceedingly new, upon every location and dwelling place along the ridgeline of Zion, as well as over her Mikre, by way of a cloud by day, along with smoke, and with a brilliant shining radiance and majestic light of flaming fire by night. So Yahweh is going to appear as light. His children are going to be radiant. And this is all going to take place in Jerusalem as those who attend the family reunion on Yom Kippurim, which is our entire mission, is to call Yisrael and Yehudim home so that they can celebrate with us when Yah and Dod return on Yom Kippurim, and that will enable all of us, this remnant of Yisrael, to camp out with Yahweh, father and son, forevermore, Sukkah. For indeed, upon all of this manifestation of power and glory will be a sheltering canopy, a chupa. And then there will be Sukkah for camping out, a temporary sheltered dwelling, serving as a representation of something manifesting greater dimensions by the light of day out of Chorab, the cutting edge and dividing line. It will be a protected place and a safe harbor from the outpouring of the violent floodwaters and from the rain, the deluge. Yeshaya, Isaiah 4:5 and 4:6. So that's where we're headed. This is the greatest of the prophets, Yeshaya, and he's speaking at a time that Yahweh is returning to Jerusalem, that a remnant of Israel will have their names written in the book of life. The earth will be restored so that vegetation flourishes. The very covenant members themselves are going to be radiant, energy-based. Yahweh is going to appear as light, and we're going to be increased in greater dimensions, going from 3 to 7 dimensions, all based upon what was revealed at Chorab, which is where Torah was. We're going to be in a protected place, a safe shelter. This is what it means to Sukkah. There is another presentation of Sukkah that I found interesting as well. It's in Amos, 9th chapter. Verses, 9 to 12 is kind of the place where you'll find it. Yahweh speaks of using a filter mechanism to determine which souls are allowed to remain in Israel, in his company, using the Torah to decide who makes the final cut. Thereafter, Yahweh reestablishes the Sukkah of Dod, which the religious have ransacked and have misappropriated. So this is from the prophet Amos. Pay attention, because by contrast, I will either instruct or I will shake every one of the Gentiles associated with or against the house of Israel. Moves a sieve back and forth, such that nothing which is troublesome will fall through to the earth. That's a test, if you will. You can be among the goy who is instructed by Yahweh and find a safe harbor, safe shelter, participating in Sukkah, or you can be one of those who is shaken and seen as being against the house of Israel, and therefore you will be tossed out with the chaff. It is imperative that God establish. This means to ascertain who lives and who dies, such that Yisrael and Shamayim are no longer corrupted by plagues of religion and politics and conspiracy. Well, the fact is that Yisrael has been, Shamayim has never been, but we don't want to transfer, God doesn't want to transfer, all of the irascible and wayward nature of Yisrael into Shamayim, otherwise we'd have an eternity of what Moshe experienced with the children of Yisrael during the 40 years of the Yatsa Exodus. So as always, that would be miserable. I don't know how Moshe survived it or why Yahweh endured it, but they were brats. As always, this determination will be made based upon our acceptance of the Torah and our willingness to go where Yahweh's words lead. By the Chorab, the cutting edge and dividing line, every one of my people who have missed the way will die, including those who protest the implication of the wrongdoing associated with our companions will not be associated with us. we to confront it such that it comes around to us and extracts a price from us. Oh, wishful thinking. But that's the nature of faith. They say a lot of dumb things, and many of them anger Yah. And this is one of many protests that Yah is going to say, yeah, I don't think so. Religious Jews in particular will remain entrenched. Believing that they will never be implicated for committing the most egregious crime in human history. And I could probably say crimes. It's not only removing his name from his testimony and then, but they also denied Dode of everything he has done to save us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to say, there will be a quid pro quo, and payback couldn't happen to a more deserving drove of, well, religious scallywags. During that day, I will erect and establish the sukkah, the sheltered dwelling for camping out, and it will be associated with Dode David. I will repair and restore its breaches because it has fallen, and I will raise up whatever is in disrepair, and then I will rebuild it so that it is like long ago and will endure forevermore. Now, we have returned to 2 Samuel 7:11 many times, and we have done so because that's the place where Yahweh and his son Dode have a lively discussion about homes. Who builds them? Who lives in them? Whose responsibility is it to be the father, and who is the son? And what we learn is that God says, I didn't ask you to build me a house, but I'm delighted that you have one. And in eternity, it's going to be my responsibility to build your home. That home will be called the covenant, and you're going to have the seat of honor within it. God is saying here that he is going to restore the sukkah of Dode. And that puts Dode as the person who is coming back. He is the Messiah, so the returning Messiah is Dode. He is the king. He will be the king of Sukkah. He is also our Savior because he has fulfilled pray, and he is the subject of the fifth, and he will fulfill the sixth Yom Kippurim and then be the reigning monarch forevermore over Sukkah. I will repair and restore its breaches and then raise up whatever is in disrepair, and then I will rebuild it such that it is like long ago and will endure forevermore. Amos 9 and 11. As a result, all of those who are called by my name, well, that's going to eliminate all progressive Israelis and progressive Jews here in America. It will eliminate the Haredim and all religious Jews because they never say Yahweh's name. As a result, all of those who are called by my name will inherit that which is associated with whatever remains of Edom, the residue of Rome and the Roman Catholic Church, and thus all of Europe, in addition to the Gentile nations, prophetically declares Yahweh, who will make this happen. So come Sukkah, and just 10 years from now, 10 years from this very day, Yahweh's going to have eliminated every confrontational soul, such that the earth is essentially depopulated, and then it's restored to a pristine condition. And then Yahweh says, I'm going to give you the modern incarnation of Edom, which would be the residue of Rome and the Roman Catholic Church and all of Europe, but also the United States emulates Rome. We have a Capitol Hill. We have our Senate. We have our Gela, our eagle. We have so much of Rome, we call ourselves a republic. So these places are going to be given to the remnant of Yisrael. Observations and coming home, we've had the opportunity to consider Edom from near and far. And each time, its modern incarnation is seen as that which has emerged out of imperial Rome, Catholicism. Should we be right, the nation and religion most responsible for abusing God's children will be possessed by those they have robbed. During the first and foremost day, there is a set-apart invitation to be called out and meet. We are now returning to Kara Leviticus. This is 23:35. Anything associated with the Malacca and spiritual counselor, duties, Abodah, you should not engage in or try to profit from a Shah. Now, the reason we say that this is the Malacca, the maternal messenger and spiritual counselor, is that God said Malacca. So if we convey Malacca, we have to be correct. And Malacca is based upon Malach. It is the feminine of Malach. Malach in Hebrew is the spiritual representatives of Yahweh. It is his heavenly messengers. So Malacca is just the feminine of a spiritual envoy, a spiritual messenger, a spiritual counselor. So it's a maternal messenger or spiritual counselor. That's just taking Yahweh at his word. And if you did not do that and you decided to pretend that Malacca meant work, anything associated with the work, you because Abodah is clearly a Hebrew term for work from abad, meaning to work, and asah means to do, which is to work. So since I don't think God said anything associated with the work of work, you should not work, it's much safer to represent Malacca based upon its root, which is Malach. And Malacca right. is simply the feminine of Malach. For 7 days, you should consistently approach and come near. And then we have a reinforcement of this feminine aspect of Yahweh's nature, because the next word is Isha. Isha is the feminine manifestation of God's fiery light unto Yahweh. Isha is only two ways you can translate the word. It is either the feminine version of Ish, fire. So Yahweh appeared as an Ish, fire, and his masculine form. When he appears in his feminine form as the set-apart spirit, the Ruach Kodesh is feminine in Hebrew, representing our spiritual mother. When it's presented in the feminine, it is Isha. And Isha is a word for female. So feminine nature of God's light of Isha, which is something we're asked to do. And here we're asked to do it, invited to do it, really, as part of Sukkah. For 7 days, you should consistently approach and come near Karab, present yourself and appear before the manifestation, the feminine manifestation of fiery light unto Yahweh. Now, it's really tough to do that if you don't know how to translate karab, which doesn't mean that you present a gift. It means to approach, to come near. If you misrepresent Isha and pretend that it's a burnt offering, when it is a feminine manifestation of God's fiery light, and when you don't know and don't say Yahweh's name. But it's all there in the text. that is Kara, called out, Leviticus 23:36. Then God goes on to say, speaking of an eighth day, because Sukkah represents forevermore, we're going to camp out with Yahweh and the rest of the covenant family for all eternity, and eight is symbolic of eternity in the Hebrew language. It is even symbolic of eternity and our numerals, and that an eight laid on its side is the sign for infinity. During the eighth day, there exists for you to approach, Haya La Atem, an invitation to be called out and meet a mikra, a summons to a meeting, an occasion to be welcomed, a time to ponder what we should call out, what we should read and recite, what we should publish and proclaim. Mikra is from my, to consider the implications of Kara, to call out and to welcome, to invite and to summon, to read and recite, to meet and to encounter one another. You should come at that time, present yourself and appear before Karab, you should approach and draw near, Isha, the feminine representation of the fiery light who purifies, enlightens, and elevates unto Yahweh. That's our opportunity. You don't have to camp out with God, but you are invited to do so. And if you do, you're going to be transformed by his light, by his set-apart spirit. We're literally going to be able to draw near unto the very presence of God.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, sounds like a wonderful invitation. And this is where it all leads. This is the purpose of all seven of the Moed Mikra. And in Rabbinic Judaism, there's no connection between them. You know, there is no connection between Pesach and Matzah. In fact, Matzah has been eliminated. There's almost no reference to Bikurim, and yet these is really one event, three parts of a single act, and they result in Shavua, being enriched and empowered, so that we can teruah, the return of father and son, on, which then gives the remnant of Yisrael the opportunity to camp out with Yahweh on Sukkah. One story.
Yeah.
And God has made it very clear as to what the purpose and the benefit of Sukkah represents. This continuing from Kara, which is named after the same verb, means to call out, Leviticus 23:36. It is time to show some discipline and some restraint and meeting together with her. So now we know that the Malacha is feminine, as is Isha, with her, such that you do not engage or try to perform or profit from anything associated with the Malachas, the maternal messengers and spiritual counselors' duties or responsibilities. The set-apart spirit can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves.
Right.
Dode, when he was anointed at eight, had the set-apart spirit come upon him in a powerful way. It made Dode the most important man who ever lived. It enabled Dode to fulfill the Moed Mikra. It enables Dode to have had three lives. You know, we're all going to have, that are part of the covenant, two.
Mm-hmm.
He had three, because he had an important mission to fulfill in year 4000 Yah.
Right.
The set-apart spirit provides counsel, Malacha, the message of counsel. She provides courage, being bold, because she's very protective, and she empowers us. She provides understanding. When we study the Word of God, she enables us to derive important insights from it. She helps us learn so that we can become effective teachers. She is the one who covers us in a garment of light so that we appear perfect in Yahweh's eyes. She anoints the children of Yisrael who have benefited from the Bereth covenant and the Mikre invitations to meet, such that we are transformed from material beings to energy-based beings, and therefore are elevated to the seventh dimension. As the Choder, Yahweh recognized, I don't know if he didn't think he had much to work with or realized, I don't have time for a mulligan here. We got 32 years. We have a lot to accomplish, and my people are really, really stubborn. So I'm going to give you the full range of all seven of the spirits of Yahweh. And with all seven, you're going to prevail. You're going to get the job done. My people will listen ultimately, and they will come home. So it's her duties that we cannot do. For example, I can tell you about how we are perfected by Yahweh. I can't perfect you. I can explain to you how the set-apart spirit took Dord's soul into Sheol and then brought him back to Shamaim to celebrate firstborn children. I can't perform what she did. I can explain how the set-apart spirit makes it possible for us to write these books and to provide the insights that are part of this program. But I'm not the one providing the inspiration and the insights and the understanding. She is. And I'm repeating what I learned from her. So there are things that we just cannot do and shouldn't even try. But we're still asked, invited, really, to come into her presence. So we are invited to come into her presence, celebrate our relationship from her, with her, understand that she has specific duties. She's delighted to do them. She serves as our spiritual mother, and therefore she is nurturing and supportive and enlightening and empowering. She's the ultimate teacher and protector for us, and we should allow her to do them. You know, Yahweh didn't say, I'm going to bestow the Choder with the seven spirits so that he can pretend like he is one of those spirits. No, it's for the Choder to learn and grow and understand and benefit and have the boldness to communicate this message to God's family. Let her do her right job while you celebrate being in her presence. You think that Yahweh is approachable. She is eminently more so, and Yahweh is about the easiest individual in the universe to be around. Awesomely supportive. So this continues to say, these godly, specific, eternal witnesses to the restoring of, they are of Yahweh. That means they're not Jewish holidays. And thank God, because they've butchered all of them. These Moed are of Yahweh, which, to offer the benefits of the relationship, you are invited and to proclaim them. Just in case you didn't see the connection between Mikra and being invited, being summoned, being welcomed, being greeted. Well, here it is right here. It's the verb, kara. And it was written in the call imperfect, which means interpret this genuinely and actually, knowing that it has ongoing implications over time, which to offer the benefits of the relationship at you are invited to attend to proclaim them accordingly as set apart and special mikre, invitations to be called out and meet for the purpose approaching the foundation of the fiery light who purifies, enlightens, and elevates according to Yahweh. To rise and ascend, Olah, including a gift, a sacrifice, and a pouring out of the word day by day. You know what the gift was, the sacrifice was. Yahweh makes it very clear in Yeshayah 9. Yeshayah 9:9-6, as a child was born, but a son was given as a gift. Yahweh's son, Dod, the Messiah, fulfilled Pesach and Matzah, making the ultimate sacrifice so that we might live and be perfected. That is what God is talking about at this time. It is the greatest discovery in the history of humankind, the realization that Dod, Yahweh, beloved son, his chosen one, the anointed Messiah, the king of Yisrael, the Zeruah, served as the Passover lamb to offer us this wonderful gift of life, of perfection, of adoption into Yahweh's family, of empowerment and enrichment, all five benefits of the covenant, all five delivered through Dod's fulfillment of the first four Moed Mikre and 4,000 Yah. That's what this story is all about. Sukkah is here for us to enjoy the benefits of relationship, for us to proclaim that we are set apart and special. Set apart means Kodesh, that we are not common. Therefore, we are not religious or political. The most common institution in the history of humankind is religion.
Religion.
The second most common and prolific is politics and government.
Yes.
And so to be uncommon, to be set apart, to be distinct, to be special, is disassociated from religion and politics. We're set apart from the ways of man and set apart unto the way of God. And this is the purpose of the Mikre, these invitations to be called out and meet, whose purpose is to approach the feminine manifestation and representation of the fiery light who purifies, enlightens, and elevates unto Yahweh. The set-apart spirit perfects us. You know, fire is interesting because it consumes decaying organic material. And it transforms that decaying organic material into light and energy. Very much like this transformation that the Spirit is offering us through the covenant and these invitation, which is to shed the limitations of our physical bodies that are organic and decaying and transforming us into light energy. This is what fire does. That's why it serves as a metaphor of how we approach Yahweh. It's Allah from Allah to rise and ascend as part of the sacrifice which was poured out of the word. Boy, you think about Dod's first person account of how he would fulfill Pesach and Matzah. And then of Yeshayah's powerful portrayal of what Dod represents to Yahweh. I mean, Isaiah 6 and 7 is Yahweh's pronouncement of, this is my son, and this is what Dod means to me. He is all of these things. This is how I perceive him. And then Yeshayah in the 53 chapter will explain why. The very fact that he served as the Passover lamb and carried our guilt into Sheol such that it would never be seen again. This is the story. Now, we are well past the end of our broadcast portion of our show. We are still recording on the archives. But we're really in a place where maybe we should stop for the evening. And then pick this up next week. We'll be at the eighth day of Sukkah. There's so much more to share.
Awesome.
It's the happiest day of the year. for us. You know, it's when we go through the Moed Mikre, the most important day for us is Matzah. The second most important day is Pesach. The most important day for Yahweh, the day that he will enjoy the most, is Kippurim, the day of the family reunion. But Pesach and Matzah, while they are wonderful for us and essential for us, with one providing us eternal life, the other one perfection, such that we enjoy the result, which is being adopted into God's family and enriched and empowered by him. Well, that's all wonderful. Pesach and Matzah, the two most essential parts of that, they're solemn affairs. When you think of what the Son of God endured so that we might live in God's presence and be part of his family, God calls them chag, so celebrations, and I do celebrate them, and I do enjoy them, because I'm delighted with what they're offering and who they are and what they're providing. But ultimately, the day that is just about partying and celebration and being together and enjoying the relationship, it's Sukkah. Kippurim is one of those that is bittersweet. It is very sweet for Yahweh. It's bitter for the family. And even God describes it. When he returns on Yom Kippurim, that remnant of Israel is going to be crying their eyeballs out.
Yeah.
Here's the first encounter of Dod as our Savior, and knowing what he went through for us to live and to be perfected and adopted into God's family, for this very day to occur, for him to defend us and to reconcile the relationship, and all of the grief that his people have given him over the years and the denials, we're going to be crying our eyes out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so, well, it's a wonderful day for Yahweh because it's finally over. You know, Yahweh says, okay, after all of this time, since they were bratty against me and during the Exodus, for 3,450 years, finally, it's over, and I don't have to listen to any of the complainers anymore. All we have is Kolebs now. There's only Kolebs and Yoshas, Ben Nuns, and Dodes, and a D and a Leah and a Kirk and a Jackie and a David and a Mike
and a Yada,
a J.K. and yes and a Yada. Yep. I look at this. I said last week that Yom Kippurim is a bittersweet time for me, because I'm retired. I've had at that point to be 32 years of every day being exciting, living in the moment to make the most opportunity to have a wonderful reunion for Yahweh, so that it's a wonderful celebration of the family reunion for our God and for his son who's given us so much. It will be the end of that journey. And there is something about reaching the end of the most exciting and meaningful thing you've ever done that, oh my, now what, you know? So, but I do think there's going to be a little bit of a fuss on this day. Just Yahweh's nature. If you listen to what he has to say about his beloved son, Dod, he's not going to let all that we have done to make this day special for him go without saying something. And when that something is, I appreciate what you've done, and it's coming from God, you know, there's going to be a fuss on this day, and that's going to be uncomfortable for a lot of us. You know, we don't like the attention in this case, you know, because we're beneficiaries too.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be awkward this day for us. But Yahweh's going to do what he's going to do because he's dad, and that's just what dads do. but Kippurim is just pure joy. You know, I'm not the least bit concerned about Kippurim, because it's vacation time, baby. It's
right.
It's go off and explore the universe, explore the earth, past and present and future. It's taking grand trips with friends, and it's working together, serving Dod and Yahweh. You know, so we get to continue to be busy and to do things that are productive and meaningful. But it's all this time of ultimate joy. You know, imagine the earth just life, and you have the opportunity as a seven-dimensional creature to explore it all. You want to go talk with the animals? Go do it. You want to go travel to one of these stars that's now nothing but a diamond? Go do it. You want to explore the moons on some other in some other solar system of some other galaxy? Go do it. No, you have that opportunity. And if you just want to sit around the campfire and sing Dod songs, well, you can do that too. You want to take a long nap? I suppose you could do that as well. So this is just a day of rejoicing and celebrating. We're going back to the Gan Eden, which is the Garden of Great Joy. And we begin our forevermore, and the numbskulls are around. We don't have to expose and condemn religion anymore, because it doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
You know, there's no news to rebuke at the beginning of a program.
You hear?
Wait.
Yeah. Yep. My knees don't hurt at the end of a long day. My back's not sore from sitting in the chair. Don't need glasses anymore. Full benefits and big ones as well. So it's a grand celebration of life. So this time next week, we'll be celebrating the eighth day of Sukkah. So I say we pick up from here and go on.
You're here.
All right.
Well done, y'all.
All right. Yeah. So thank you very much for participating. Thank you for listening. We look forward to being with you this time next week. Have a wonderful Shabbat. And it is lovely when Sukkah begins on the Shabbat, as you know, in 2033, year 6,000, yeah, the 120th will begin on the Shabbat. God's planning is impeccable. Also, there will be a full lunar eclipse. There'll be fireworks in the sky on this day, just as on Teruah in 2033, there will be a total solar eclipse. So great fireworks in the sky as we move towards this day 10 years from now. Just 10 years from now, we celebrate the ultimate Sukkah. So it is very close. It's sweet. We can almost taste it. So looking forward to that day, and yet I'm so fixated on how much there is left for us to do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So thank you for the social media. Thank you for working on the glossary, Kirk. Wish you all the best in your upcoming art show and with Dee with your wonderful move. And I want to thank the Malak for continuing to keep us safe. This is now the fourth year where all hurricanes have been diverted, and it is nice to live under their protection. Good night, you all. Happy Shabbat. Have a wonderful celebration of Sukkah. Look forward to being with you next week. Good night.
Thanks.
Good night, Kirk.
Good night, Dee. See you later.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Here's to choice, to making your voice be heard, to getting exactly what you want, especially when you eat. At Subway restaurants, you choose your freshly baked bread, meat, cheese, and veggies to make a sub that's just right for you. Come in and create yours today. Subway, eat fresh.